As Stringfellow pulled in at the doctor's office, Doc Tolliver and Hap Holloway hurried out to meet the car. Bootlegger Preacher Perry stood on the low porch. Hap opened the car's back door, and the doctor leaned in. Brow furrowed, he felt the sheriff's wrist. Slim hurried around the car to help. The doctor backed away.
I can't feel much pulse. Y'all carry him up into the operating room. Hurry.
Slim and Hap each took one of the sheriff's arms around his neck. Buckaloo was a dead weight. The doctor hurried up the steps while Perry held the door open. Uncle Henry offered Lydia his arm. Slim wondered if the rancher realized what she was and if it would make any difference to him. His guess was that it wouldn't. Stringfellow seemed to meet life head on, taking it for what it was and accepting with good grace what it was not. They stretched Buckaloo upon a long, narrow table that had a pad on it about as thin as the mattresses in his jail, though this one, at least, was covered by a white sheet. The doctor ripped the shirt open. He removed a wadded piece of woman's slip, stiff with dried blood. He glanced at Lydia.
A good thing you stopped the bleeding, or he would have been dead long before now.
Will he live?
I don't know.
Tolliver's nurse pushed up a small table with alcohol bottle, pan, bandages, and surgical instruments. The doctor looked at the other four people.
Well, you've done your job. Now it's time for mine, if you wouldn't mind waiting outside.
In the outer room, Slim noticed that a dark bruise half-circled one of Hap's eyes.
What got a hold of you?
Don't ever play cards with somebody who's bigger than you are and cheats.
How'd you happen to show up just when we needed you?
Preacher brought me over here to see if Doc had heard anything about Laura Lou.
Laura Lou? What? Something happened to her?
A botched abortion. They think she'll pull through, but she's all messed up inside. Never will have any babies.
He rubbed his arm.
Still kind of sore from where they stuck that big needle. They pumped a tub full of my blood into her.
Slim remembered his brief infatuation with Laura Lou and tried not to dwell on the disillusionment that had ended it.
Seems like she went through a lot more punishment than she had coming to her. I guess her daddy's with her?
He's been sitting in the Kit Kat with a bottle welded to his mouth. Laura Lou's over in Odessa all by herself. I'll borrow Preacher's car tonight and go see about her.
I didn't know you was interested in Laura Lou.
I guess I always was, from a distance. And now we're blood kin, if you want to look at it that way.
Slim thought he should warn Hap that she was likely to hurt him. When she recovered, and whatever momentary gratitude she might feel had spent itself, she would probably revert to her true nature. But he doubted Hap would be receptive to that kind of admonition. He hadn't been. Some lessons were not transferable. Each man had to learn for himself. He studied Lydia, who sat apart from the men, her head down, her hands clasped as if in silent prayer. He sensed a sincerity in her that he doubted Laura Lou would ever understand. His mind drifted to Tracy Whitmore. She would be pleased about the well and the fact that it had been her father who brought it in. Perhaps now Audie could live for the future instead of slowly killing himself over the past. Trinidad held the screen door open for Elise Underwood and Choctaw. Elise immediately seated herself beside Lydia and squeezed the woman's hand.
Any word?
Lydia shook her head but didn't speak, nor did she look at Elise.
He's a good, strong man. He'll be all right. You'll see.
Knox Anderson entered the room. He asked no questions, for he saw the answer in the faces.
Uncle Henry told me your will came in. I'm glad for you and Victor. To be honest, I wasn't sure you could do it.
Elise tried to respond to his goodwill, but the mood in the room was too tense.
I told you we would. Someday, Knox, you'll learn to trust my judgment.
I never questioned it but once. You and Victor proved me wrong that time. I'm ashamed when I think of the times Buckaloo asked me for help, and I was afraid to give it to him. This might not have happened if I had. I would suggest that we all join hands in a circle and do some strong talking to the Almighty.
They stood up and stretched their arms, clasping hands. Perry bowed his head.
Dear Lord, there's a man in yonder who's in bad need of thy blessing. He's a good man, and we can't afford to lose him. I believe thou art too merciful a God to turn us over to the Philistines, even though we're a wicked people who have too often slighted thee for spirituous liquors and the sins of the flesh. This is a man who has tried to serve thy people and gotten damned little help from us in return. So we ask thee to help him. Amen.
You were right, Peter, about us not helping him much. In a way, this town put him where he is.
It wasn't the town that shot him. It was Irish O'Dell.
But it's a town that tolerated O'Dell and Radke and Big Boy Dougherty and the rest. It's a town full of people too busy to stop and stomp a snake as long as the snake's just biting somebody else. I wish Dave could wake up and find out the town was waked up too.
There's three snakes laying out yonder that won't ever bite anybody again.
But except for Lydia, the town didn't have anything to do with it. Big Boy Dougherty is still sitting over yonder in the hotel, milking this community any way he wants to. And nobody but Dave Buckaloo has lifted a hand.
Dougherty pulls the puppet's strings. But if you take the puppets away from him one by one, pretty soon he wouldn't have enough for a show. Henry, I'm as guilty as anybody. I've been too busy with my own worries to pay attention to Dougherty. I don't even have any idea how many men he has working for him.
I can tell you pretty close. One time and another, most of them had given me and Preacher some grief. Take away the three that's gone, he's still got 10, maybe 12 that'll go out there and do his dirty work. Collector's percentage, run his gambling operations and such. That's not counting a few small-time pickpockets and hijack artists that pay him protection to let them operate.
We could get us a bunch together to go rush the hotel like the cavalry used to charge my ancestors.
And probably get some good men killed. I remember how it was in France when we went over the top and charged the German lines. It would be better to outflank Dougherty than to run at him straight on.
Yeah, this time of day they're generally scattered out doing whatever Big Boy is paying them for. He might pick them off one or two at a time, like pulling the legs off of a spider till he can't walk anymore. Yeah, what do you say, cowboy? You game?
Slim felt misgivings. A lifetime of ranch work had trained him for hunting cattle, not hunting men. But he couldn't back away from the challenge without looking as Douglas Clive must have looked, caving in to Irish O'Dell.
I'll do what I can.
I got some rough and ready roustabouts down at my pipe yard who would probably be tickled to get in on this. One other thing. Nobody but us knows the sheriff is hurt and that three of Dougherty's men are dead. Dougherty's probably sitting in that hotel room right now, wondering. It'll be better to keep him wondering as long as we can.
Well, it's getting on to dinner time. Wouldn't surprise me if we was to find one or two of them down at the tea garden feeding their faces on the Dutchman's grub. He'd probably itching to say howdy to Tracy anyway, huh?
I figured on going as soon as I could. I didn't figure on fighting my way in.
Well, oughtn't to be no fighting to it, hardly, if we work it slick enough. I got a notion Tracy can help us.
No, sir. I don't want her getting hurt.
She won't. She'll set the trap. We'll spring it.
He glanced toward Choctaw.
You look like just the man we need. How about you, Poncho?
The name is Trinidad. Yes, I will go. The sheriff has been a good friend of mine.
Just don't get yourselves killed. I'll be along as soon as I can with some help.
Well, if it goes smooth enough, the only help we'll need is a truck to haul him away in. And maybe you ought to fetch along that deputy Whitey so everything will stay about half legal.
Hap set out down the street afoot. Slim took long strides to catch up to him, wondering what Hap had on his mind.
We don't even have any guns.
Man carries a gun, he gets to wanting to use it. It's generally the wrong people who get shot.
The four of them entered the tea garden. Slim, Hap, Choctaw, and Trinidad. The place was building toward its noonday rush. Slim let Hap look around for Dougherty's men. His eyes were on Tracy, coming out of the kitchen with a tray of food. She set it on a table where four laborers were seated. Just as she started to put the plate lunches in front of them, she saw Slim.
Hey.
She spilled half a cup of coffee on the floor, fortunately, and not on one of the customers.
Careful!
I'm so sorry. Let me mop that up.
Apologetically, she finished serving the men, then made her way among the tables to Slim. She was too self-conscious to hug him in front of so many people, but she gripped his hands.
I'm tickled to see you, Slim, but I wish you weren't in town. If Frenchie should find out...
I'm hoping he does.
He wanted to kiss her, but would not embarrass her. He squeezed her hands and let go. She rubbed two fingers under his chin and brought them away with a black smudge. He hadn't done very well washing all the oil off.
Did the well come in?
Sure did. Your daddy was the one punched it through.
I'm glad. Maybe now we can quit worrying about him so much.
Tracy, There's two of Big Boy Doherty's men at that table over yonder. You see them?
Of course I see them. They eat like horses and never pay. Mr. Schwartz feeds them to keep from having this place smashed up some night.
You go tell one of them that there's a man waiting at the kitchen door who's got something for Big Boy Doherty.
I don't see anybody back there.
We'll be back there. You just go tell him.
Don't you know the kind of men those are?
Don't worry about Slim. I'll take care of him.
You just look at your eye. You can't even take care of yourself.
Go ahead, Tracy. Something that needs to be done.
All right, but if you both get killed, don't come crying to me about it.
The four of them started around the building. Choctaw paused to lift a length of oil-stained rope from the bed of a parked truck.
You know how to hog-tie a calf, Trinidad?
All my life.
They reached the back door. Hap opened it.
You all stand off out of sight. They know me, so they'll probably think I'm here to make a payment for Preacher. Whichever one comes, I'll lead him out.
You want to take him, cowboy?
Slim wasn't keen on the idea, but he would not stand back and look the slacker.
You just watch me.
We got it outside. Come on and we'll give it to you.
In his nervousness, Slim almost lunged at Hap, who walked out first. The man who followed was a short, burly-looking fellow with a flattened nose, probably broken in some long-ago fight for the wrong cause. Slim threw his arms around him and wrestled him to the ground. Surprise gave Slim an edge, but that didn't last long. The man quickly found an angry strength and was about to break free when Hap and Choctaw jumped in to help. Choctaw pulled the man's thick wrists together behind his back.
Tie him, Trinidad.
The Mexican quickly took several wraps. Choctaw pulled the man's legs up and Trinidad tied them close to the hands. Then he cut the rope, saving what he had not used.
Oh, I ain't had so much fun in a month. We better get him out of sight before the other one comes looking for him.
Slim pointed to a three-holer toilet made of lumber framing and sheet iron. In the noon sun, it would almost be hot enough in there to boil water.
That'll hold him.
They dragged the burly henchman across the bare ground and into the stifling toilet.
It stinks in here.
Don't breathe and you won't smell it.
They closed the door and set the wooden bar that would hold it shut.
Let me out of this shithole.
They waited a while for the second man's curiosity to get the better of him.
Well, looks like I've got to go fetch him. You all be watching.
Oh, no, you don't.
Hap came flying out through the screen door, a tall, angry man on his heels, shaking his fist.
You bastard!
Slim made a lunge and missed. The man caught Hap and had both strong hands around Hap's throat. When Choctaw threw a big arm around his neck and chucked him loose, he wrestled the man to the ground. Slim jumped on to help hold him while Trinidad made the tie. Hap's face had a bluish look, and he rubbed his throat. A wide-eyed Tracy came out the door, followed by her puzzled-looking mother.
Are you all right, Hap? I thought he was fixing to kill you.
What did he say to make a man that mad?
He'll have to tell you. I won't.
She went back into the kitchen, followed by her mother.
Let me out!
Preacher Perry came into the alley as they dragged the second thug to the toilet and shut him in.
Boss, gonna get you, bastards!
Knox Anderson is wondering where y'all are. He's brought some roustabouts and a truck.
Slim nodded toward the toilet.
We made a start. I wish I know what you said to get that feller so head up.
I just told him that I heard some of the girls over at Jolene snickering about him. I told him they had a funny name for him over there. He didn't think it was nearly as funny as I did.
What name was it?
I'll see if Tracy'll tell you. It sure turned her face red.
Where next?
They're running a floating poker operation in the back room of Shemp Oliver's dance hall. Craps, too. Yeah, Shemp don't like it, but there ain't been a damn thing he could do about it.
Is that where you got your shiner?
Yep. A feller named Grat watches over the game. Him and that gambler are beat up on me with a billy club that Shemp uses to keep peace.
Let's go.
Slim had avoided the dance hall, not for moral reasons so much as frugality. He was the first to enter the back door, his eyes taking a minute to accustom themselves to the interior after the bright sunshine. Half a dozen men were seated around a table, cards in their hands. The players appeared to be oil field workers, except for one who wore a white shirt and a loosened necktie. No one paid much attention to Slim. He recognized Grat, sitting in a leaned-back chair, sipping beer from a brown bottle and watching the game.
You want to join the game, dishwasher?
I'll be taking a hand in a minute.
Trinidad and Hap walked in. Grat saw Trinidad first and set the beer bottle on the floor.
Hey, you! We don't allow no damn Mexicans in here. Vamoose! Holloway! We throwed you out of here once.
He came up with a billy club. As he started forward, Hap turned and moved briskly to the back door with Grat in close pursuit. By the time Slim got outside, Choctaw had Grat down on his stomach, pressing the billy club against the back of his neck, pushing his face into the alley's sand. Trinidad made the tie.
Pretty soon we need more rope.
How does that alley dirt taste to you, Grat?
What about that gambler in yonder? Is he one of Doherty's men?
I don't think so. I think he just gives Doherty a cut to let him play. He's as slick a bottom dealer as you'll see.
Slim followed Hap back through the door. Hap stepped up to the table where the poker game was taking place. He watched a minute or two until the gambler raked in a pot.
Guess it's all mine, boy.
Did you see how smooth he pulled that card out of his sleeve? Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Ain't many men can do that and not get caught.
No, wait a minute. He was cheating?
What did you say, Hap?
The gambler's face flushed as he became aware of sudden hostility among the players.
He's seeing things, boys. I don't have anything up my sleeves.
It was a lost cause.
Why, you son of a...
In an angry rush, the roustabouts piled on him, knocking him and his chair backward to the floor. Hap moved toward the door. A satisfied smile spread across his freckled face.
Come on, cowboy. They're doing fine without our help.
I didn't see him pull a card out of his sleeve.
I could have been wrong.
Knox Anderson waited in the alley with a half-dozen tough-looking roustabouts and a truck that had tall wooden sideboards. In the bed of the truck stood a couple of thugs, their faces battered, their clothing torn.
The boys picked up a couple of them on the street.
He watched two of the men lift the hog-tied Grat up into the truck.
The preacher said you have a couple more.
We got two in the toilet.
There'll probably be one coming out of Shemp's in a minute, as soon as the boys get through teaching him the Caprock rules of poker.
That'll teach you to cheat at cards.
And don't come back!
Two brawny oil field workers pitched the well-chastised gambler out into the alley. His nose had been bloodied, his face bruised, his shirt torn into strips.
Does this one go, Mr. Anderson?
He goes.
What are you doing? You
can't put me in here. I got my rights under the law.
Shemp Oliver stood in his door, watching with a mixture of puzzlement and anxiety.
We'll pay like hell when they come back.
They're not coming back.
Uncle Henry Stringfellow brought an apprehensive Waddy Fuller into the alley.
Well, I sure do wish Dave was here.
If he was, what would he do?
He'd haul them down to the jailhouse.
Waddy brightened. He drew himself up to his tallest and stiffest lawman stance and followed as the truck moved down the alley. The roustabouts retrieved the two from the sheet-iron toilet and hoisted them up with the others. Tracy came out the back door of the restaurant. She stared in momentary disbelief at the truck with its cargo of Doherty men, then beckoned to Slim.
Two more of them just came in to eat.
Three of Anderson's roustabouts stepped forward.
We'll fetch them. That'll just about make us a truckload.
They followed Tracy into the rear of the restaurant. The roustabouts came out, dragging two disheveled and bewildered men Slim recognized from his dishwashing days. Dutch Schwartz had one of them by the collar. Several oil field workers spilled out the door, cheering on Schwartz and the roustabouts, volunteering their muscle to whatever remained of the job.
We'll deliver these to the jail. Then we'll start a sweep of the places where Doherty's boys are known to hang out.
What about the hotel?
We'll leave Big Boy Doherty for last.
Most of the crowd followed Anderson and his roustabouts and the truck. Tracy came to Slim's side and studied him critically.
Looks like there's more than enough men to take care of them. You could stay out of it.
Job's not over yet.
The biggest one of them all is Sarge. They made Jolene take him on as a bouncer. He's even stouter than Ox was. Liable to take several of us to whip him.
I whooped Ox. Well, I fought him to a draw anyway. I reckon I can handle this Sarge. Y'all coming?
Coming.
Do you really need to go to Jolene's?
Don't you worry, Tracy. I'll see that whatever he does down there, he doesn't get any fun out of it.
Slim had never been inside Jolene's place. He let Choctaw and Hap go in first, for they seemed comfortable with it. Trinidad hung back, stopping at the door.
You watch the outside. This is no place for a married man.
If you need me, I will be here.
The first thing that struck Slim was the heavy odor of strong perfume. The second was that the two young women seated on a davenport were not as pretty as he imagined they would be. One was 20 pounds too plump, her rolled-down garters pinching into heavy legs. The other showed a slight gap between her front teeth.
Howdy, May.
Howdy, Peaches.
My, how you both sparkle.
Sparkle? Slim felt disappointment. He had assumed that anything so popular would come in a better-looking package. He had never seen Jolene, except from a distance on the street, but he recognized her as she stepped from a room just down the hall. She gave the three men a quick looking over and settled her gaze on Hap.
Kind of early, ain't it? Even for you?
I regret to say that we've come on business, Jolene. We've come here looking for Sarge.
What could you possibly want with Sarge?
Oh, Choctaw's come to stomp the way out of him.
Somebody looking for trouble out here?
Slim decided Sarge was larger even than Choctaw. He wished they had brought some of Anderson's roughnecks. Hap seemed to have the same thought, seeing the two men together.
Are we looking for trouble, Choctaw?
I can whoop him.
If y'all are gonna fight, take it outside. I'd sooner have two buffalo bulls loose in here.
I don't know you, do I?
You'll know me when we get through.
Choctaw opened the door and motioned for Sarge to go ahead of him. On the sidewalk, Sarge turned and rushed. Choctaw took two long steps to meet him. Slim thought Jolene had expressed herself well. He had never seen two buffalo bulls fight, but he doubted they could hit each other much harder than Sarge and Choctaw. He watched, fascinated, as the two big men struggled and sweated, trying to wrestle each other to the ground. Sarge was by all odds the larger, but he had not indulged in the hard physical labor to which Choctaw was accustomed. Slim wasn't sure which was the strongest. They went down on the walk and rolled out into the dirt street, Choctaw on top for a moment, then Sarge. Both men had fists like sledgehammers, and they used them to the same effect. Traffic stopped. The drivers got out of their cars and trucks to watch the spectacle of these two huge men thrashing and tumbling in the middle of the street. Slim smelled Jolene's perfume. She stood just behind him and Hap and Trinidad.
I wonder if you boys know what you're doing. I've been wishing for somebody to come along and do this to Sarge, but I dread seeing what happens to you when Big Boy sends his troops out.
Don't you fret, Jolene. By tonight, Big Boy's gonna be the lonesomest man in town.
Before it was done, the two combatants were moving slowly. First one and then the other raising an arm, a fist, as if it weighed 100 pounds. Choctaw's stamina, reinforced by hard work, finally won out. Sarge lay on his back, chest heaving. He waved one hand to beg for peace because he had no breath left to speak. Choctaw was astraddle of him, his clothing shredded, sweat cutting ribbons through the dirt on his bloodied face.
Hap, go fetch the truck.
Slim helped Choctaw to his feet, the big man's weight almost bringing him down before the Indian got his balance. Hap and Trinidad dragged Sarge out of the street and up onto the wooden sidewalk so the traffic could move.
First time one of Big Boy's bunch has ever looked good to me.
I want to go see about Sheriff Buckingham.
Choctaw seated himself on the middle of Sarge's back.
You go ahead, cowboy. Me and Trinidad will stay and watch out for Sarge till Anderson's truck comes to haul him off.
Slim found Elise Underwood and Lydia sitting side by side in the doctor's front room, still waiting. Their faces told him they'd received no word. Uncle Henry Stringfellow waited with them.
Things still going all right out yonder?
Fine. I'd hope by now you'd have some good news in here.
The doctor hasn't been out.
Lydia gave Slim a glance, but said nothing. Slim sat down across the small room from the women and tried to read a newspaper, but he gave up and put it back on the end table. After a time, Doc Tolliver came in, wiping his hands on a towel. He smelled strongly of medicinal alcohol and ether.
Everybody should have so many friends.
Lydia's face was lifted hopefully to him, silently begging.
The bullet came out all right. He won't do much sheriffing for a while, but he'll show his scar to his grandchildren someday.
Tears welled into Lydia's large hazel eyes.
Thank you. I told you.
He'll be a while coming out from under the ether. But you can go in and sit with him if you'd like to.
Lydia?
Lydia stood up and started to follow the doctor, but stopped.
No, I don't belong there. I'd best go back where I do belong.
He'll be asking about you.
Just tell him... No, there's nothing to tell him. Except that I thank him for letting me know how to live again. Even for a little while.
She pushed the screen door open and stepped out on the porch. She hesitated a moment, then moved down to the sidewalk. Elise started after her.
Lydia.
But she halted at the door.
You know where she's going, don't you?
I know, but she doesn't belong there.
Not many do. Life doesn't always ask us what we deserve. It gives or it doesn't. It sets us on a road, tells us to walk it, and locks the gate so we can't turn back. Ain't much we can do here. Let's go see how Knox and the boys are coming along.
Slim stopped as he reached the street. He could see Lydia walking in the direction of Jolene's.
I wonder what it takes to unlock a gate.
The sweep by the roustabouts gathered more candidates for the jail than Hap Holloway had predicted. Standing outside the iron-barred cells, Slim counted 16.
They've gathered a few sheep with the goats, but when the shipping time comes, you send them all away.
There's one still missing besides Big Boy Dougherty himself. Remember Frenchie?
When he sees what's happened to the rest of them, he'll leave town anyway. Waddy, we'll have to do something about your overcrowded jail.
You want me to shoot some of them?
Not a bad idea, but impractical. I'm afraid you don't have enough real evidence to hold these men. If Dave Buckaloo had been able to prove anything, he would have jailed them already. You'll have to turn them loose as soon as a lawyer shows up. And one will. They always do.
After all the trouble we went to in catching them, I'd rather shoot them.
I suggest we load them all into the back of my truck and haul them to Odessa. I'll phone ahead and hire a couple of boxcars. We'll ship half of them east to Fort Worth and half of them west to El Paso, under seal. That will scatter them pretty well.
Is that legal?
No, but they haven't let the niceties of the law be any obstacle to them. I've seen other boomtowns ship out their undesirables this way.
I'm glad Dave Buckaloo never thought of this. He's considered me undesirable ever since I've been here.
I'll get one of the men to bring the truck.
Waddy Fuller unlocked the cells.
Come on now, get out. We're heading back to the truck.
They were forced to walk through a gauntlet of Anderson's men and climb up into the truck bed.
You can't hold us without charges.
But this is kidnapping!
And don't come back no more!
I don't ever want to see this hellhole again.
Though his action probably was no more legal than the deportation, Waddy deputized Anderson and the roustabouts who were to accompany the Dougherty men to Odessa. He made a stern speech to the prisoners on the truck.
Y'all are damn lucky we're so kind-hearted, letting you get out of this town in one piece. But if any one of you ever shows up on Cap Rock again, it's gonna be open season on you. This is the law talking to you.
The truck pulled away, followed by Anderson and a couple of carloads of roustabouts, firmly committed to seeing their cargo safely to Odessa and freighted out according to plan.
The biggest one is still left, at the hotel.
We ought to have waited with the truck and shipped him with them.
No, he'd get them organized and be back here before the dust settled. It's like with cattle. One or two old outlaws can turn the whole bunch wild. That kind, you rope and tie down and separate from the herd.
Well, I sure wish Dave was here.
If he was here, what do you think he'd do?
He'd walk right in and put the cuffs on that old warthog. He'd probably take some help with him.
I'll go with you.
He was curious about Dougherty. As much as he had heard the name, he hadn't seen the man. Not many people in Cap Rock had.
We'll all go with you.
Slim turned on his heel and started toward the hotel. A nervous Waddy was at his side as they walked into the small lobby. The desk clerk looked up from his ledger, surprised at the invasion.
What in tarnation?
Albert, Is Big Boy Dockerty in his room?
He's always in his room. About the only time he ever leaves his room is to go to the toilet down the hall.
Has he got anybody with him?
Well, not that I know of. It's an odd thing. Generally, his men are coming and going all the time. Today, they've been going out and not coming back.
We've noticed that. I wonder if he has.
As a matter of fact, he's come to the balustrade up there two or three times in the last hour or so, asking me if I've seen any of his boys. He's been walking the floor, too. I can feel it shake all the way down here. It would be too much to hope, I suppose, that you're about to relieve me of my starb order.
That's kind of what we had in mind.
He looked around to be sure he did not go up the stairs alone. Slim moved up to one side of him, Hap the other. Choctaw and Trinidad followed. Waddy was about to knock on Dockerty's door.
If I was you, I'd stand to one side. What if he was to shoot through it?
Who is it? Is that you out there, Turk?
Sweating, Waddy turned the knob and flung the door open, then stepped quickly back out of the way.
Who's out there?
Waddy worked up his nerve and stepped inside. Slim and the others followed him. Slim had not known just what Big Boy Dockerty would look like. He had heard he was a large man, and he had expected him to look fierce as a lion. What he saw was an incredibly fat old man with his shirt unbuttoned and his underwear soaked in sweat.
Who are you? What right you got to come barging in here this way?
We're the law, and we've come to arrest you.
To arrest me? You got nothing on me. I've been right here all the time. I don't know nothing about your sheriff getting himself killed. It was somebody else done that.
Who said anything about the sheriff?
I heard it. One of my boys come in with the word.
He was wrong then, because the sheriff's not dead. But there's three of your men laying out yonder, and they're dead.
My boys? Dead? Which ones?
There was one called Irish and one called Skinny. And there was the one you hollered for just now, Turk. He won't be answering you anymore.
He wound up in a slush pit, just like Ox.
Dockerty trembled. Slim half expected him to collapse like a big canvas bag filled with water. Dockerty sank deeper into a sagging davenport. He rubbed a hand over his rubbery face.
My boys, I can't believe Buckaloo killed all three of them.
Irish and Skinny killed each other. A woman called Lydia shot Turk Radke.
Where's the rest of my boys? You all done something to my boys?
They're on their way to Odessa for a long ride on the train. You're the only one left.
Waddy lifted a set of handcuffs from his belt.
And now, Mr. Dockerty, you're under arrest. Stick out your hands.
You can't hold me. I got lawyers. You can't put me in no crackerbox jail.
I've been thinking about that. I've been wondering what Dave would do. You ain't going to jail, Mr. Dockerty. You're going on the train.
Waddy fumbled with the cuffs, trying to fit them over Dockerty's huge wrists.
Boss! Boss, we gotta get out of here!
The man called Frenchie burst through the open doorway. His appearance caught Waddy by such surprise that he didn't even try for his pistol. Seeing what was happening, the wide-eyed Frenchie jerked an automatic from his pocket.
All of you raise your hand. Be quick!
His hand still shook a little, and Slim realized it would not take much to cause Frenchie to pull the trigger. He lifted his hands to shoulder level, dreading recognition. Dockerty pushed himself up from the davenport and shoved Waddy aside. His face showed an immense relief.
Good old Frenchie. I thought they chipped you out with the others.
Well, I seen them coming and I hid. I got your car outside with the motor running, boss. You better grab your shoes.
Yeah.
He picked up a pair of big shoes that lay where he had kicked them off, one of them topside down. He didn't take time to put them on.
You the pearl diver that like to broke my hand. Come on, you go on with us to make sure the rest of this bunch don't give us any trouble. I say, come on!
Slim glanced at his friends, but knew there was nothing they could do to help him. Tingling with apprehension, he went out the door behind Dockerty, wondering what they would do when they were through with him. Frenchie brought up the rear.
You all stay back now, you hear me? Boss has trouble with the stairs. You take his arm, help him down.
Slim grasped Dockerty's left arm. It was sticky with sweat. Frenchie moved to the other side and took the big man's right arm, holding the pistol in his free hand. Dockerty felt his way down the steps slowly and carefully, stumbling once, almost dragging Slim off his feet. Slim kept his eyes on Frenchie and that pistol, watching for any chance. Near the bottom of the stairs, Frenchie looked forward.
Now there's a rug down there, boss. Careful you don't trip on it.
Slim gave Dougherty a hard shove toward Frenchie. The big man tried to catch his balance. Dougherty's great bulk hurtled toward Frenchie. The two men crashed against the railing and splintered it like two bulls smashing through a corral fence. All Slim could see as he knelt to retrieve the fallen pistol was Frenchie's right hand reaching out from underneath Dougherty's body. The fingers appeared to be broken.
Oh, my hand!
You know, I had a horse fall on me just like that one time.
Dave Buckaloo had been dozing, half in and half out of sleep. A shadowy form moving between him and the window's morning sunlight finally brought him awake. He forced his eyes open and focused them on Doc Tolliver.
What time is it, Doc?
What difference does it make? You're staying right here.
Dave had come out from under the ether last night and realized he was in one of Doc's white-painted hospital rooms. Most of it remained a blur to him. His last fully clear recollection was of being in Henry Stringfellow's car with Lydia holding him. He had a dim memory of Waddy Fuller telling him something about rounding up Dougherty's men. It had not made much sense to his ether-dulled mind at the time, and it made even less sense now.
Has Waddy been around this morning?
Him and several more. Few of them are still out there. I told them you wouldn't be fit for company, but they stayed anyway.
Send them in, would you, Doc? I gotta know what's happened.
Are you sure you wouldn't rather rest a while longer?
Send them in.
It's good to see you awake, Mr. Buckaloo. For a while there, we didn't know.
Dave kept watching the door. He felt keen disappointment. There should be another.
Waddy, you tried to tell me something last night about Big Boy Dougherty's bunch, but I couldn't hold on to it.
They're all gone.
It was the community, Dave. I told you folks would sooner or later get enough of Dougherty's mob. Caprock chewed him up and spit him out.
Mr. Anderson and some of his hands, they shipped Dougherty's men out of Odessa last night. I told them they'd better not ever come back. Put the fear of God into them, I did.
Dougherty, too?
Oh, he's on the chain. Looks like a big old bullfrog squatting out there on the courthouse square. A Texas Ranger named Grissom phoned the office this morning, wondering if you're getting tired of Dougherty and his outfit. Said he thought it was about time to come down and make a raid before they owned everything in town. Seemed a little put out when I told him we'd beaten him to it. He said they'd finally gotten enough evidence to make a case against Dougherty and offered to come take him off our hands. I said sure, it'd be a good riddance.
It would be.
He looked over at Victor and Elise.
Things are a little muddy in my mind, but seems to me y'all brought in your well, didn't you?
Elise did. She and a good crew.
When you feel up to talking business, Dave, I'd like to discuss a lease on your ranch. It's not far from Victor's well, so the chances for oil ought to be pretty good.
Dave wasn't sure he wanted the place messed up with oil wells, but on the other hand, they might pay him enough to buy more land. Maybe the Clive Ranch.
Since the Underwoods found the oil, I ought to give them first refusal.
We've already talked about it. We thought we could make it a joint venture.
Maybe. Right now, my head's not straight enough to be talking business. Cowboy, you've had a good taste of the oil field now. You about ready to go back to punching cows?
Well, not yet. I think I'll give this oil business a little more time.
A little more time, and then more again. The world has lost another cowboy. Tracy, how's Audie? Feeling pretty good?
Too good, I'm afraid. He came into town last night, drank an awful lot. Choctaw and Trinidad have taken him back out to the well, but I don't know if he'll stay. I guess we expected too much.
We'll keep watching out over him.
That probably won't be enough. Audie's had too many devils riding on his back.
I'd better be taking Tracy back to the cafe. The dinner crowd will be starting in pretty soon.
Maybe she won't have to work there a lot longer.
Yeah, that's the way I got it figured. So long, Mr. Buckaloo. We'll be looking in on you again.
Dave watched them warmly as they went out the door, arm in arm. There might not be much chance for Audie, but Tracy and Slim were a new generation, and every new generation brought a renewal of hope. Everyone seemed to have run out of anything to say. Dave waited for someone to volunteer what he wanted to know.
Anybody seen Lydia?
No one answered for a minute. Elise and Victor Underwood looked at one another. Henry Stringfellow stared at his pipe.
She's gone. She went to Odessa and caught the train.
Dave lay back on his pillow and closed his eyes. He wished he could sink once again into the mercy of sleep. The pain from the wound was small against the one in his soul.
I talked with her a lot yesterday while we were waiting to see if you'd live or die. She said she isn't good enough for you. Said if she stayed, everybody would talk. She didn't want to shame you.
I wish she'd spoken to me first. I lost a good woman once worrying about what people would say. I'd have held on to Lydia and let them gossip all they wanted to. I wouldn't give a damn anymore.
She said she was going home to East Texas.
But I don't know where her home is.
I do. I'll tell you if you decide to go.
The doctor came in. He felt Dave's pulse, then his forehead.
A little company is good for him, but rest is better. You all come back another time.
Doc, how long you reckon it'll be before I'm out of here?
I can probably send you back to your own room in 2 or 3 days. But you won't be working much for a while.
In his mind, Dave saw a pair of hazel eyes.
I wasn't thinking about working, Doc. I was wondering how long it'll be before I'm up to making a trip on the train.
Elmer Kilton's Honor at Daybreak is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2002, Elmer Kilton. Published by arrangement with the estate of Elmer Kilton, care of Sobel Weber Associates, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2017, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Terrence Aselford as narrator, Thomas Keegan as Dave Buckaloo, Jacob Yeh as Slim McIntyre, Drew Kopas as Hap Holloway, Todd Schofield as Victor Underwood, Nora Ashrati as Lydia, and Tia Shearer as Tracy Whitmore. With Christopher Graybill, Michael John Casey, James Lewis, Amanda Forstrom, Catherine Aselford, Alyssa Wilmoth, Eric Messner, Bradley Smith, Chris Gennebach, Jonathan Lee Taylor, Christopher Walker, Richard Rowan, Scott McCormick, Michael Glenn, J.W. Roan, Alejandro Ruiz, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Mort Shelby, Ken Jackson, James Konacek, David Jordan, Evan Casey, Kimberly Gilbert, Christopher Sheeran, Jeff Allen, Andy Brownstein, Nick DePinto, Dylan Lynch, Colleen Delaney, Tracy Oliveira, Steve Wanall, Tim Carlin, Nanette Savard, Ryan Carlo Dalusung, Karen Novak, Patrick Stratton, and Lily Beacon. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by David Zitney. Book adapted for graphic audio by Catherine Aselford. If you enjoyed Honor at Daybreak, be sure to listen to Elmer Kelton's The Man Who Rode Midnight. Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another thrilling title in graphic audio.
Holt Corrigan is your brother, I take it.
Yeah. Haven't seen him for a long time.
Heard he was in a gunfight in Amarillo. Got himself killed.
Heard that too.
He would have been involved in every bank holdup in 3 states if you believed everything you hear.
Help the little lady up and apologize.
Or what?
Yes. It involves lead.
There'll be another time.
Anytime you want to die.
Two men are out there. Just rode up. One's an Oriental, the other's white. I think he's only got one arm.
Sounds like my brother, Blue Corrigan. Lost his left arm in the war.
You still preaching?
I help with services in town from time to time.
touch my family, and you will die a horrible death.
And that's Silka with Blue. Silka's our partner. Nakashima Silka is his full name.
You must be calm. The trick is to unbalance the opponent.
There's another story about you. 2 years ago in Austin, the way I heard it, three fellas were leaving the bank after robbing it and ran into you. You took down the first gunman with only your hands while he was pointing a six gun at your belly. In a split second, you grabbed the gun, killed the second outlaw, wounded the third. Heard that story all over Texas. Thought it was crazy talk, until I saw you in action today. Now I've got a hunch it was true.
Are you D. Corgan?
I am. Want to make something of it?
Hell no!
I'm not interested in going against Deed Corrigan. You know that.
Well, neither am I, Aegon.
What are we gonna do?
We're going in.
This is a setup, Blue. You know that.
Of course it is. But I don't see any other way.
How about using our guns?
The Corrigan Brothers.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can select from over 900 titles and 60 series in either CD or high-quality download formats. If you would like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase the whole sets on CD or USB flash drive from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can now earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable toward future online purchases. You can also get full mobile downloads directly to your phone or tablet with our new Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices, so you can listen on the go, anytime, anywhere. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our email newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.